You're listening to BFM 89.9, the business station. The BFM Breakfast Grill. Top interviews you can't afford to miss. Presented by the CIMB Group.
With me this morning, His Excellency Christian Rerun, the Chilean Ambassador to Malaysia. Ambassador, welcome to the Breakfast Grill. The Malaysia-Chile Free Trade Agreement signed in November 2010 in Yokohama, Japan, came into force in February 2012. Can you tell us, give us an update in terms of where the FTA is? And we know the Malaysia-Chile agreement is solely based on trade. Can you give us a detailed update on value as well as in the breakdown of trade between our two countries?
Well, thank you very much for inviting me, and be glad to be here to you to share some common experiences. Regarding the FTA, yes, as you may know, it was signed in the Yokohama Summit, on the APEC Yokohama Summit, came into force last year. So we are in the first year, I would say, of putting it into effect. You know, it's open free trade agreement where the almost 100% of the goods are included, with the only exception of some products that are not more than 2%. So we're talking that when the FTA itself is in full implementation, it will mean that all our tariffs between Chile and Malaysia in terms of products will go up to 98% of the bilateral basket.
Okay. A couple of years ago, trade between our two countries was about $340 million. It was massively in favor of Chile. Chile would send us salmon, wines, for example, things like that. And we would send you electronics products and electrical products. But there is a bit of an imbalance. We buy way more stuff from you than you buy from us. What is the ratio looking like right now?
Well, you better than us know that the rationality of signing FTAs is not only signing by signing. And in the first 9 months, we're very proud to say that the early effects of the free trade agreement are very beneficial and very positive for both sides. In the case of Chile, you know that always you could have some differences between FOB and CIF, between central banks or customs of both countries. But in the case of Chile, according to our data, Malaysia grew 25.8% of its trade to Chile. That's huge.
From a solely trade perspective on the FTA, within 2 years of implementation, the MCFTA is envisaged to include goods and services as well. Are we on track to just start negotiations on goods and services as well?
I would say, the first result, as I was telling you, are very encouraging. So in 9 months, we could say that the FTA already increased and create trade, bilateral trade. We're not just putting trade from one part or one region to other. We are creating trade, and that's very important. For Malaysia, it incremented its export, and we also diversify our products to Malaysia in what you were talking. So there is today a very perfectly balanced, I would say, between both countries, and that's very healthy because, by the way, not only unilaterally Malaysia grew its export to Chile, but in terms of global trade, I would say bilateral trade, our basket went up over the $400 million. So for 9 months, it's a very encouraging number.
Okay. In leisure and hospitality terms, tourism, of course, would be bolstered by South American, Malaysian, or in fact Chilean terms. What is the policy with regard to open skies and with regard to air travel between our two nations? As we understand, no direct link thus far.
Yes. Well, that's very interesting because despite distance, we have always said that like globalization, we don't look it as a threat, we look it as an opportunity. And the Pacific Ocean for us is, in this case, an opportunity, despite distance. So the situation today is that we just put into effect what we call a bilateral air service agreement that was negotiated in Kuala Lumpur in the last 3 years and signed in Kuala Lumpur in April 2010, and that we have just put it into effect in both sides. This is a very, I would say, aggressive open skies, absolutely, totally open skies that could allow any service and any of the six liberties under the Chicago Convention. That means from passengers, from whatever I would say service you could consider, and that means also products. So it just began less than 1 month, and could allow theoretically that airlines of both countries that are already working could, let's say, have the chance to arrive to Chilean or in this case Malaysian airports.
Where Chile, the economy is concerned, you have a market-oriented economy characterized by a high level of foreign trade and a reputation for strong financial institutions. That's given you the strongest sovereign bond rating in South America. Tell us a little bit about how Chile got there.
Well, this is a sort of process, I would say, and it's in line of the openness and the strengths of the economy. Like Malaysia, Chile grew last year 5.6%, a low inflation, a low unemployment, a sort of very strict fiscal and monetary policy that has allowed to be not only strength from a sort of, I would say, a stability, institutionality, but also from a day-to-day economy. So that means that despite that we're a faraway country and we are not a critical from the point of view of our external debt, we have been very, I would say, orthodox in the sense that all the check and balances has been put into the table, and this effort has become increasingly as a process. So we're talking about what Chile began decades ago, this process, and this process is giving some results in terms of image, in terms of seriousness, in terms of stability, not only economically, but also socially and also politically.
Underlying the strength, Ambassador, is a rule-based counter-cyclical fiscal policy, which basically means that the Chilean government accumulates surpluses in sovereign wealth funds during periods of high copper prices and growth, and allows only deficit spending during periods of low growth and low copper prices. Again, I mean, how did the government arrive at this, you know, what is essentially very, very counterintuitive, as in spending during tough times and, you know, saving during good times? That's very hard to do.
Yes. Well, from a personal point of view, I would say that this is related with a change of culture. Chile was a sort of isolated country for almost 400 years. Nobody, in a way, went to Chile. We were far away from the main, I would say, world trends in terms of air transport, tourism, etc. So when the world began to be a little bit open thanks to globalization, we took the chance, let's say, to go a little bit beyond our comfort zone. Normally, we were receptors of policies, of resources. So there were, I would say, very sustainable public policies towards the fact that we should be taking care that Chile, as a isolated country, was also, with the challenges of globalization, sort of exposed. And we are actually very exposed. Today, 90.5% of our export depend on FTAs, and that could increase when Thailand and with Vietnam put our FTAs into effect. So we're talking about almost 96% of our export are related with FTAs. So this golden rule, it means a sort of, I would say, any housing culture. When winter comes, we should be prepared. And when summer or good times, we should be also prepared. So this counter-cyclical a process that only not means raw materials, commodities, that we have been very lucky. When you are in winter, not Malaysia, but the North Hemisphere, when they are in winter, we're in summer. So all our fresh food, all our production, agro-industry, goes in the contrary sense, against, I would say, the normal rule. And that applies for bad times as well. And that fiscal rule, I would say, has been encouraged and has allowed us to remain a very stable and, I would say, a very healthy situation for everyone.
We are joined this morning by His Excellency Christian Reverend, the Chilean Ambassador to Malaysia. After this, Your Excellency Ambassador, a discussion on copper prices and in fact, copper, which is basically a third of Chile's economic output.
Brewing Financial Minds.
BFM 89.9.
We are joined this morning by His Excellency Christian Reren, the Chilean ambassador to Malaysia. Now, Ambassador, Chile, the world's top producer of copper, it currently accounts for a third of global supply with a similar share of global reserves. Because it is such a large component of your economic output each year, you are heavily dependent on copper prices and copper demand. And, China is seen to be, in fact, is one of the biggest buyers of your product. Problem is, in the last couple of months, copper prices have essentially fallen off the cliff. And good times seem to be over. Many people say that the global resource boom is now over. How has this affected Chile, and how are you positioning the economy to deal with this essential downturn?
Well, absolutely, you are correct. In old times, copper used to be called the salary of Chile, because it amounted at some stage almost 70% of the national incomes. Things have been changing in comparison with this process of openness that we were talking about. So for the first time last year, copper, in a widely approach, was less than the 50% of the total Chilean export. That's a huge, I would say, success, because normally copper is, and mining is Chile, obviously, the most important productive, the most important receptor of FDI. So in that sense, in the line of our strategy, copper in a way remains a very key element, copper itself and mining itself. But on the other side, let's say this has been accomplished with some new emerging strategies towards globalization and towards open markets that has allowed us to challenge copper as our main, main old salary. So that means that today other sectors are as important as copper, not in the amount, but for example, we're talking about seafood, we're talking about fresh fruit, we're talking about salmon, we're talking about services. So this is a very important thing. Now, what you have mentioned is a reality. Our total exports came down 2.5 billion last year. That means almost a 2% of the 2011 number. That's not so serious, but it's directed. It's directed to the copper prices. So copper prices is a reality. Our fall down. We are not so concerned about China and Asia. Malaysia as well is a huge buyer of copper, but our concerns obviously have been gone to Europe, where the drop down was very serious.
But nonetheless, copper remains a mainstay of the Chilean economy, and right now, just over $7,000 an ounce, it is getting precipitously closer to the $5,000 an ounce production costs that Chilean producers are currently managing. Is there a strategy by the Chilean government, for example, to perhaps reduce stockpiles, to cut back on production to address this price plunge, essentially?
Absolutely. That's a very good question. There have been the governments, the last decades have been taken very seriously. There is a sort of a copper fund. There is despite Codelco, they say the state-owned company, we have the Copper Commission that deals with all these phenomena that you are taking, looking markets ahead. And obviously, we have taken not only, I would say, econometrical measures in terms of creating a fund for these balances and balances, but also, let's say, in terms of looking forward. One of the main challenges you have mentioned is, I would say, what we call the law of the mineral. As Chile has the most important open and underground mines, obviously, after decades and decades of exploitation, the law of the mineral is getting down. Normally, in a good exploitation number, you should talk about 1.2, 1.3%. We are in Chile talking about today the old mines in terms of 0.7, 0.8. So there is a diversification of new mines, new investment, and that means that also the results have been very successful, because we have a portfolio for the coming years of $103 billion in terms of mining. That shows you that despite all these uncertainties, copper and mining remains in Chile a very, I would say, challenging but a very vulnerable sector. But we're confident in the sense that the measures are already on the table, and that has allowed us to to have a sort of buffer, not only in terms of prices, but in terms of production, because our challenge is to achieve the historical production that we need for those profits.
Joining us this morning, His Excellency Christian Reverend, the Chilean ambassador to Malaysia. Now, Chile, just like many other resource-dependent nations, whether it's Australia or whether it's other nations such as Russia, you have benefited from the resource boom, no question about it. That's been a challenge in terms of the price inflation that has been inflicted on the on the Chilean economy. Underlying that, though, Chile as a country has one of the biggest wealth and income disparities in the world, reflected by its Gini coefficient. How has Chile addressed this social divide between the haves and the have-nots?
Well, that's a very interesting. Obviously, the Gini coefficient has remained very, very difficult to attack, 0.51, according to my last data. So that's a reality. Even Chile, within the OECD, despite that it's not the worst one, but it's one of the worst one. It's the third from the bottom to the top. So that's not easy to deal with. And this is related with a sort of different reasons, different scenarios, and means that despite that we have been growing in the level that we have been growing, and despite all this, I would say, good news that we have been talking about, obviously one of the main challenges, even poverty for Chile is not, I would say, as for Malaysia, for example, is not a strong reality towards the MDGs, because we have overcome those MDGs. But, for example, in terms of inequalities and disparities.
Well, that's one of the big concerns, because Chile, just like the Middle East, has suffered from its own Chilean winter. The youth have, even previously, quite politically apathetic. They've confronted the government and the business elite. They wanted reforms in education, transport, energy policies. And sometimes these conflagrations ended violently.
That's absolutely. Even the president has welcomed this sort of civilized movement of the students, because they are challenging better opportunities at the end. It's their own view about what they should look forward. They want opportunities. They don't want money. They want just better opportunities and an education of better quality, not just any education. Now, there is obviously a very interesting discussion about if the education should be totally free for everyone. And you know, the academics and the experts haven't agreed in the big sense of that, and that means a sort of a political consensus, and the political consensus is already going. I think that with encouraging results, but it's not an easy way to deal not only with the, I would say, the education that remains, I would say, a challenge for Chilean better levels of development or high income as Malaysia. Education is a key issue. But I would say the public policies toward attacking the disparities that already exist and remain in the society.
The resource boom has also had its own negative side effects on Chile's competitiveness. Escondida has spoken out, and of course they are 58% owned by BHP Billiton. They said that the proposition for Chile in terms of its competitive advantage is declining. Business in future will not be pretty. I mean, how would you respond in terms of addressing your declining competitiveness globally?
Well, I would say there are cases and cases. In an overview, I would say we are in an excellent moment. Chile reached last year, 2012, an historical FDI of 28%. Of 28 billion, that means that almost 70% from the previous year. So in terms of, I would say, that fresh resources, is not a problem of, I would say, of confiability. We are already there. The issue is that in the case of mining, as a main receptor of, I would say, FDI, and as a main productor of resources, there are new emerging sensibilities that are related with the countries that are emerging. And, for example, is the case of the environmental concerns, in the sense that Chile, despite education and despite, I would say, disparities, and I would say despite innovation that are, from my point of view, the great challenges that we have ahead, the environmental concerns have become in Chile something that you shouldn't expect in the last decades. So we don't want, in a way, what people is saying, NGOs, the political parties, and all the stakeholders. We don't want just any sort of development. We want a sort of constructive, a sustainable development, compromise with some environment concerns. And in this sense, some specific projects in the area of mining are facing a sort of, I would say, societal challenge in terms of that should be online of new emerging environmental concerns that in the past were not so highlighted. I'm talking about decades ago. So in that sense, I would say that this is a very located, perhaps, situation, but in a way doesn't mean that it would affect a sort of image or a drain of resources, because the data is showing everything on the contrary.
Okay. Now, outside of your investment in, you know, fisheries and copper production, one very interesting nugget, and this is in line with South America's centuries-old fascination with the stars. By 2016, Chile would account for 75% of global investment in astronomy. You already lay claim to owning the world's largest telescope. You do have a long and fascinating history of studying the universe and the stars. Spend a bit of time on that, if you can, Ambassador, and tell us what this all means for the Chilean economy.
Okay, as Malaysia, Chile also is looking ahead with its own 2080 agenda that we share with Malaysia in, I would say, almost 100%. We know, we agree, and we're absolutely conscious that commodities will be easily ending. When, it's not really important. So what we have to pursue on is what we have been talking about, how these invisibles of our societies can be put it into the first line. We're talking about education, we're talking about innovation, we're talking about research and development. So in that sense, perhaps, because it's geographical, as it has been called in Chile, a mad geographical country, so long and extended, so narrow country, we took some advantages early on the sense that, as you have mentioned, this passionate for the skies, for the universe, of our ancestors, that comes from the Mexico up to Easter Island. And that's today, after decades of working, making joint ventures, alliances with different sectors, NGOs, academic, of different countries, we have been able to achieve a sort of critical mass after 60 years. So astronomy has become a real challenge for Chile, not only from a scientific point of view.
Well, how does gazing at the stars benefit the Chilean economy at a time when perhaps the resource boom could potentially be over?
Perhaps it's not very politically correct what I'm going to say, but even dreams, I could say, could be profitable. And that's the case of Chile. We have just installed a couple of weeks ago the most important, the project ALMA, the large telescope in the Atacama Desert. And this is part of a sort of ongoing process that will be allowing us on the coming years to become 75 or 80% of the world investment on astronomy. And that means a lot in terms of research, in terms of investment, in terms of human capital for Chileans, in terms of universities. So this, in a way, I would say, is a very sustainable way on looking for areas that perhaps doesn't look so attractive, so extractive as mining.
Could this be the new search for the resource boom? And let's end with Massimo Taranghi's comments. He's the Italian director of the Santiago office of the European Southern Observatory. He reckons that Chile will find evidence of life on other planets in just over a decade's time, perhaps by 2025. Is this it all tying together in finding the next resource field, and perhaps interplanetary as well?
No, absolutely. You are absolutely correct, and that's a very interesting challenge. I hope that will coincide and it will be online on better levels of development for Chile, for Malaysia, for any country. And I think the pieces are online. That means that if that happens, scientifically, that's absolutely possible, because the amounts, not only in terms of investment, but the amounts in critical scientific investment that is already taking place there is already giving a sort of very important results through the universe. And that means a long-term investment in human capital. So that's, I would say, a very interesting reality that hasn't been perhaps so highlighted, but could be a very challenging issue towards what Chile is also looking forward to become, with better levels of development, less dependent of commodities, less dependent on natural resources, and looking for innovation and entrepreneurship as the real challenge of our near future.
Ambassador, fascinating speaking with you. Thank you for your time. That was His Excellency Christian Reren, the Chilean ambassador to Malaysia, BFM 89.9.
The BFM Breakfast Grill was brought to you by the CIMB Group, Southeast Asia's leading universal bank. BFM 89.9, the business station.